Must be Friday. If you hear that deck of yeah, you know it's a Friday. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. The show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. A tremendous Friday to all of you, wherever you might be. Wait, Rome. Why are you hitting me with a deck of yeah? It's not Friday. It is for me. You know, that joke was a lot funnier prior to the pandemic. And now every day is Friday for most people, so it's not that funny anymore. Not when all the days run together. Not when it's just one long day that never ends. Yeah, I used to like that joke a lot. It's not so funny anymore. Except I'm not in tomorrow. That is a fact. In fact, I'm not in Monday either. It is a four-day weekend for yours truly. I think I'll take that deck of yeah one more time. I'm not looking for any additional credit here, but I will say I'm one of the fortunate ones. I have been working since the pandemic started, and I've not had a day off. Not looking for credit. Don't at me. Don't get up at me. I'm just saying. I've gone straight through, and if I don't use all that vacation, I lose all that vacation. So I've got to mix in a couple of days. And at the start of the year, I looked at the calendar and thought, oh, there's a long holiday weekend.
No days off.
2 days off. And if you're wondering what I'm doing for the long holiday weekend and where I'm going, the answer is my backyard. I'm going nowhere, and that's awesome. That's all good. All right, telephone number is toll-free. I've got an excellent getaway show, even if I'm getting away to my backyard. The getaway show looks like this. Phone lines are open, 1-800-636-8686. Denny Hamlin is going to join me at 40 past hour number one. Second hour is a really critical hour. It's a really important hour. It's going to be a fun hour. Things I want to get done. I've got another player profile for the Smack Off. Today, Benny in Wisco gets the jungle treatment. Before that, however, I've secured audio of Narc Bra meeting with city officials to talk about the reopening of Huntington Beach. He went before the city council. I have the audio. We will break it down. And I'm going to pose the question, something I want you to think about. Does that make him a narc or does that make him a concerned citizen? Narc bra or concerned citizen?
Bra.
Maybe you need to hear the audio. Maybe you need to hear his performance. Maybe you need to hear what he said and how he addressed city officials and how he showed up. Maybe you can't make up your mind yet. I had already made up my mind prior to seeing this, and it only confirmed what I already thought. And I've got a feeling you're going to say the same thing, no matter how you feel. That's in hour number two. Hour two is a huge clone hour. Narc bra going before city officials in a town hall meeting, and also Benny and Wisco getting the jungle treatment. Third hour is a very busy hour. Bryant McFadden, CBS Sports NFL analyst and a two-time Super Bowl champ, joins me at the top. Mo Williams, the head basketball coach at Alabama State, joins me right after that. Alvin's week that was, or in this case, the 4 days that were, also coming up. We have a brand new episode of the Jim Rome podcast with Brandon Boyd, frontman for Incubus. We had a good day. It's going to be a good, good show. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at habitate.com. Someone's going to lose a ticket. If I don't give away a golden ticket, somebody's going to get one ripped. Or somebody's going to get one ripped anyway. I told you. I told you golden ticket recipients, show me something this week. You haven't shown me jack. Somebody's losing their ticket. In fact, maybe all of you are losing your tickets. Let's see how I feel about that. 1-800-636-8686. It's a getaway day. I've got a four-day weekend. I can do anything I want right now. I can do whatever the hell I want on this show. I've done it for 30 years. I'll bust the format wide open. I will even interrupt what I'm about to say in the opening block, which is always the most important block, for the right phone call. Not for any call, but for the right call. start dialing. All right, I want to go back to The Last Dance yet again, man. This is the gift that continues to give. The gift that just keeps right on giving. It's like, I don't know, if I had to come up with an analogy, it's like taking a cinder block and dropping it into a pond because there are ripples that just keep going on and on and on and on. This thing never stops. You have the initial series, then you have the reactions to the series, like Horace Grant saying that Michael Jordan is, quote, a damn snitch.
That's a damn snitch right there.
That's a damn snitch right there. Mike. And Grant is not the only teammate who is pissed about that series. As I mentioned yesterday, Jackie McMullen had reported earlier this month that people close to Scottie Pippen say that he's been wounded and he's disappointed about how he was portrayed in the documentary. David Kaplan reports that Pippen is, quote, so angry and, quote, beyond livid about the depiction. He reportedly did not like Jordan calling him selfish for how he handled his injury, and he, quote, felt like up until the last few minutes of Game 6 against the Jazz, it was just bash Scotty, bash Scotty, bash Scotty, quote, end of quote. I could see how Scotty would feel that way. I get it. While Jordan did praise Pippen early in that doc, most of the Pippen content after that was about Pippen's lowest moments and questioning Pippen's toughness. That pissed me off too. I mean, with a friend like Mike, who needs enemies? Not that Jordan probably cares, but that really is kind of a rough look when your running mate on the team for more than a decade and one of the greatest players of all time is, quote, beyond livid with how you kept running the bus over him time and time again. And then you've got another teammate who helped you win three of those rings calling you a damn snitch. These are two really important guys to Jordan. But I don't think that's going to bother him very much because he seemed to be fine with both of those storylines being in there in the first place. And it doesn't appear that he's all that close with either Pippen or Grant. And it doesn't seem like he wants to be close with either one of them anyway. But the aftermath has not been all bad when it comes to how Jordan treats his teammates. The Undefeated has a story involving Jordan, Brad Sellers, and an Olive Garden. In other words, what if I told you that one of the nicest things that Jordan ever did for a teammate took place at an Olive Garden, and that it did not involve unlimited breadsticks and salad? Story goes like this. Sellers was drafted by the Bulls in 86. Jerry Krause told him the plan would be for him to become the first 7-foot small forward in the NBA. Like he'd be the ultimate stretch four, maybe even a stretch three. But then Grant and Pippen started to emerge as players. Sellers probably looked at the writing on the wall, realized he was not going to get that much playing time, and then he wanted out. So Sellers came up with his own plan. Quote, I told MJ, you got to go in there and tell them that this is not going to work for me here. End quote. Sellers said that Jordan then said to him, you really want me to do that? And Sellers was insistent, quote, absolutely. So Jordan said he'd do it. The next day, according to this story, Sellers is at, where else? The Olive Garden. And he's sitting there and he's enjoying a plate of chicken parm when the restaurant manager approaches and says, quote, Michael Jordan is on the phone. Remember, this is 1989. It's not so easy just to track people down. Not like it is now. And yet somehow, some way, Jordan knew that Sellers was going to be at the Olive Garden at that time. I don't know, maybe the guy always had a chicken parm at the same OG at the same time every single day. Maybe he really was family there. Maybe he liked doing the math.
Okay, so I've done the math on this never-ending pasta bowl. 42 different sauce and pasta combinations.
Well, you do the math, I'm doing the Alfredo.
Olive Garden's never-ending pasta bowl with new Asiago garlic Alfredo. Spaghetti sauce and pasta combination, then another.
Mess slays me every single time. Anyway, Jordan tracks him down at the OG. Sellers takes the call. And according to Sellers, this is what Jordan said, quote, they're trading you to Seattle tomorrow. Good luck, B, end quote. That's incredible. Like, forget making up the LeBradford Smith stuff. Forget all the runs that Mike took at Isaiah. Forget about him laughing out loud at Gary Payton. Michael Jordan calling a teammate at Olive Garden to let him know that he's been traded might be the finest moment of his career. Like, you do the Alfredo, Sellers. I'll do the trading. At your direction. You think having your delicious chicken parm being interrupted by the manager to tell you that Mike Jordan's on the phone would be a good thing? But having your Olive Garden meal interrupted to be told that you've been traded to Seattle is pretty horrible. The only thing worse than that is that Sellers brought the whole thing on himself. I mean, that was not a case of Jordan being a bully. That was not a case of Jordan deciding, man, I don't like this guy. He's soft. He doesn't fit. We don't need him. I'm going to trade his ass. I'm going to wait for him to sit down for his favorite plate of chicken parm at his favorite restaurant, and I'm going to send his ass to Seattle.
Seattle.
I mean, that would be like in character for what we've seen the entire doc. Except that's not what happened. Sellers went to Jordan and said, hey, you got to get me out of here. So he did. And Sellers said after, quote, when I got to Seattle, I said, what in the hell did I just do? I was young and dumb, end quote. I'll tell you what you just did. You wanted more playing time. You wanted more chicken parm. You got them both. You did the math, didn't you?
Do the math. I'm doing the Alfredo.
It's like one of those jokes that even though you've heard it 100 times, it makes you laugh every time. It's so good. So what does that say about Jordan, though, and the week he's had? What's that say about Jordan and his rep? They're calling the Olive Garden to tell a guy that he got traded is like the nicest thing somebody has said about him this week. I mean, Horace called him a damn snitch. Scotty apparently is, quote, livid with his depiction of Mike. Mike's probably sitting there like, what's Scott so pissed about? It's not like I said he was cheap. It's not like I called him no tipping Pippin. I did him a favor. I put him in my dock. I guarantee Mike's probably sitting there like, why is he so mad? Man, I hyped him up. Didn't I call him my best teammate ever? Didn't I say there wouldn't be 6 rings without him? Well, yes, you did say those things, Mike. And you also called him selfish. And you questioned his toughness. And you weren't even there when he didn't come off the bench. And yet you spent a lot of time on that in the dock. Especially curious since the doc is supposed to be about the last dance, the last year. That wasn't your last year. And you weren't even there for that. You were playing baseball. Mike's like, yeah, you act like I called the guy up at the Olive Garden and traded him. That was Sellers, not Scott. The gift that keeps right on giving. 1-800-636-8686. Did I mention in hour number two? I've got Sound of Narc Bra going before city officials at Huntington Beach. And one of the topics on the table was whether or not they should open up certain restaurants or at least the patios of certain restaurants so people can eat outside. As things start to loosen up, more and more people are starting to gather. Places and establishments are opening up, and the thinking is, if you're going to do something like this, you better maintain social distancing, and it's better to do it outdoors than it is indoors. That would stand to reason. Except Narc Bra does not necessarily see the logic in that. He's not saying that he won't do it. He's saying, I'll do it. Okay, I'm not going to say what he's saying. You have to wait and find out. I have audio of what he's saying. And he's not saying it on Twitter, and he's not saying it here. He went before city officials. And you guys see the way this guy represented when he went before city officials. That's coming up in hour number two. Additionally, good beef that I've been trying to get to, a social media beef between Francis Ngannou and John Jones. I've been trying to get at that for the last few days. I will take another shot at that later on today. Benny in Wisco gets his player profile. The NBA may start up again, but if it does, it's going to be, reportedly, at Disney World. And we will discuss exactly what that means, too. Denny Hamlin later on this hour. Brian McFadden in hour number three. Mo Williams in hour number three. Albie's 4 days that were in hour number three. You clones get your own hour in hour number two. And I got a four-day weekend. I'm off tomorrow. My guy, Bill Ryder, will be in studio here. in my Southern California-based studios on Friday and Monday. Make sure you listen to him and watch him. All right, short timeout, and then we come right back. Capital One knows that life does not alert you about your credit card. Hey, couch surfers. We've got nonstop tunes to keep you rocking while you work. Oh, and hey, Colleen. Yes, you, Colleen with a K. Your free trial of Movie Plus ends tomorrow, and your card may be charged. Do you want to continue, or do you want to cancel? Do you want to cancel? Meet Eno, the Capital One assistant. Eno looks out for surprise charges, like when free trials do expire. It helps you if you need to fix them. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you are not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Limitations apply. Capital One.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
I can't guarantee that I'm going to drop a golden ticket on somebody today, but I can guarantee I'm going to rip one. Maybe more than one. So I'm bouncing around a little bit. I'm trying to get a lot of things done on this getaway Thursday. Me, I'm getting away for the long holiday weekend, and I'm getting away to my backyard. The same place I've been every single weekend since it all started. And happy to do so, by the way. So I'm jumping around a little bit. I had a reset of The Last Dance at the top. I've got Denny Hamlin coming up next segment. And right now, let me go off the board. And the reason I'm going off the board, I'm going to talk about the podcast, and I do this every single week as a way to promote the podcast, because what we do on our side hustle is very different than what we do right here. It's off the board because this one's different. And for the long weekend, I think now would be a perfect time for a lot of you to jump into the Jim Rome podcast universe if you've not already done so, because we are doing some damn work over there. Yesterday, I dropped episode number 130. Of the side hustle. We're coming up on our third year anniversary in a couple of months. And yes, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the longevity. I'm proud of the consistency. I'm not one of those guys who started that side hustle, got really gung-ho and fired up on it, and then quit 15 weeks in, or 15 eps in, or 7 eps in. I'm not somebody who does it when I feel like it. I'm not somebody who does it, then takes 7 weeks off. We do it every damn week. You get your episode every single week, and they're all good. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the range of conversations we've been able to have over there. And there's not a better example of range than this week's ep with the front man of one of the biggest rock bands of the generation, Brandon Boyd of Incubus. Incubus is a multi-platinum band that has been selling out enormous venues all over the world for 20 years now. They recently were back from a trip to India and South Africa, where tens of thousands of people showed up to see them play. But what makes their story really awesome to me is it all started at the very same high school that I went to. Calabasas High School, baby. 818 for life. San Fernando Valley, if you need us. So I had to get Brandon's thoughts on what it was like to grow up in the deep 818 and what he thinks of Calabasas today.
I feel like it's come a long way in certain respects. It's come a long way and then gone all the way off the deep end. You know, it's become sort of an enclave of celebrity culture, Calabasas, which is so weird because when you and I were growing up there, it was kind of like an off the beaten path quasi-suburb, but it was mostly like horse people and people that wanted to homestead and be kind of away from LA. And so those were my takeaways from it. It was amazing because there was no television reception where I lived, so we didn't have cable. So my brothers and I were essentially brought up outdoors. You know, we were learning how to catch snakes with our hands and befriend tarantulas and learning about native plant species and got just bored enough that at a certain point during, you know, our teenage years, we all started playing music. And then our parents were kind enough to let us make just a terrible ruckus in the garage for a number of years when we started our band Incubus. So I think that a little bit of boredom is actually a wonderful thing.
This dude rules. Like, he kicks ass. He nailed that. How many times have you heard me talk about being outside with my old man building fences for horses in Calabasas? Normally, you don't think of that kind of a lifestyle when you think of Los Angeles. but you go about a half hour northwest of downtown, and that's the way it used to be there. Whereas Brandon points out, he and I grew up before the Kardashian takeover. Something else that Brandon Boyd and I have in common, besides where we grew up and where we went to high school, is that we both knew at a pretty young age exactly what we wanted to do. Brandon laid that out in the podcast.
While I was at Calabasas High School, when I was about 16 or 17 years old, I accepted that I would likely be a struggling artist, but I'd be happy as an artist. So the fact that our band has had any success at all is surprising to me, to say the least, but also a welcome surprise.
Any success at all? You mean selling tens of millions of albums and touring the world with the same dudes you started the band with in high school? Yeah, I would imagine that is a welcome surprise. What an amazing story. So not only did he and I go to the same high school, not at the same time, but we went to the same high school, and that band, one of the biggest bands in the world, started at that high school deep in the 818. So you look at Brandon Boyd today, you see the immense success, you see all the fans, the millions and millions of albums sold, the shirtless photos. You would think that this guy would have all the confidence in the world, but that was not necessarily true when he first started. And in fact, he would even tell you it's not necessarily even true completely today.
I was terrified of going on stage. I was okay with like singing in front of a handful of friends in our backyard or in our garage or something like that. And even then, there was something kind of nerve-wracking about that. So I don't know. It something happened at a certain point. And it's not that I don't experience nervousness before we perform. Honestly, think that there's something really good about nerves. They're informative. You know, in the same way that like pain can be informative in your body, like when something hurts, it's like you should probably pay attention to that. You can learn what not to do. And nerves for me are kind of a signal that it's like, oh yeah, you're still not an expert. And that's a good thing. I think that it's good to have kind of some semblance of a beginner's approach to these forums that we walk into, lest we become, you know, kind of these egomaniacal heads who arrive and think that they're God's gift to, you know, music or performance, and that's when stuff usually goes south. So a little bit of humility in approaching these situations, I think, is a good thing.
This dude, God, such a good dude. Even gave us a couple of F-bombs. Quote, nerves are informative. Quote, humility is a good thing. Quote, a little bit of boredom is wonderful. Man, my man is so humble and so thoughtful. And he has every reason to be exactly the opposite, but he's not. And as always, if you talk about him too much, he will direct the conversation back to the band all the time. And speaking of humility, I asked Brandon how long he thinks it took him to actually become a proficient, to become a good songwriter. Here's a really interesting response.
I would say it was somewhere in the ballpark of right around or under 10 years. I may have stumbled onto some interesting or novel ideas in little bits and pieces here and there. But one of the wild things about our band is that we have all of our fumbles and all of our bad songwriting decisions. They're all like on YouTube and they're all on iTunes and Spotify for everyone to listen to. I say this all the time, but most musicians who we know about have had the luxury of their learning curve being hidden away in a relative obscurity, right? You know, and like bands that they were in high school that nobody heard of. And our band that we're in today was our high school band. So all the songs we wrote when we were teenagers are like, you can listen to them. And a lot of it makes me cringe. It really, to me, we kind of came into our own, or started to come into our own as songwriters around 1998, 1999, when we were writing and recording our record, Make Yourself. And then, as it turns out, that was the album that kind of truly like put us on the map for the first time. But before that, you know, we were still unconsciously showing all of our influences. And there's nothing essentially wrong with that. But, you know, you weren't hearing the most original band in the world previous to Make Yourself.
If you don't like thoughtful, you're not going to like this. It's really thoughtful. It's cool. And I'm laughing because he talked about our high school band. Like, how many of you listening were in a high school band? Some of you, right? Did your high school band turn out to be Incubus? Really is amazing. And I love, 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 love music. I love my bands. I can't say how many times I've had an opportunity to talk to a, quote, rock star and been so into it only to be let down. This was not one of those times. Fans of the band know everything changed with the release of Make Yourself in 99. Of course, that changed everything in a moment. That brought in K-Rock. That brought in MTV. They went from being a opening act to a 20-year headliner. They put out 5 really good full-length albums since then, and they show no signs of slowing down. And what's funny about the podcast, really quickly, a major reason for doing this particular episode came up when a listener sent that email and brought up that Incubus brought them up when I was talking about Tom DeLonge's UFO videos last month. I reset the entire thing for Brandon at the top of the conversation and then asked him what he made of Tom DeLonge's U.S. government-confirmed UFO videos.
I haven't talked to Tom in many, many, many years, but, you know, we do have some history with Blink-182. So first of all, I have to just applaud him for following his passion like that. What do I think about them? I'm not terribly surprised. I'm kind of shocked at the fact that it's taken this long for any kind of acknowledgement of unidentified craft in our atmospheres. As far as what I think it is, I am not at liberty to say. I honestly don't know. I don't know what that stuff is, but it's fascinating. And I love being perplexed by the sheer magnitude of possibilities around that stuff.
All right, so he is smarter than me. He is more thoughtful than me. He is not at liberty to say what they are. I am. Well, I'm very much at liberty to say what's in that unidentified flying craft. Freaking aliens. Aliens. Quote me. Aliens. Little green folk. Allegedly. So it's a 40-minute back and forth that I could never have here on this radio program, which is why we have that side hustle. So if you want to hear me chop it up with a local dude who went to my high school and then went on to become an amazingly humble and deep-thinking rock star, and you want to hear something different, you find that conversation. We talk about surfing, songwriting, hot dog on a stick, all things 818, what we're both currently reading, and why Brandon Boyd is fascinated with mushrooms, fungus, and mold. It's awesome. And I couldn't like and respect the guy any more than I do. It's on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, JimRome.com, and it's pinned right to the top of my Twitter feed right now. Check it out. Tip of the hat to old man Ritt for turning that interview. I'm telling you, we're doing good work over there. We are doing really good work over there. Make sure you check it out. When we return, Denny Hamlin joins me. And then top of hour number 2. I found the audio. Exclusive audio of the snitch. The snitch from Huntington snitch going before city officials and taking them to task, going right at them. That's top of hour number 2. Player profile also in hour 2. Right now, it's time for a sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
If I'm being really honest, I have not been giving myself enough credit lately. I want to flex. Talking to rock stars, NASCAR legends. Got a little bit of everything here. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, the second hour, I've already laid this out. Big, big clone hour. But first things first, we're joined now by the driver of the number 11 FedEx Express Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. He is a 3-time winner of the Daytona 500. First driver to win back-to-back Daytona 500s since 1995. He was the winner of the Toyota 500 last night at Darlington, 4th overall in the standings, and is breaking out a special paint scheme ahead of Charlotte to pay tribute to small business owners, which is a great idea. We are joined by Denny Hamlin. Denny, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Doing good.
All right, so you're coming off a win last night that had rain, a driver flipping off another driver, a fox on the track during a caution, and more. But first off, how does it feel to wake up this morning as a winner and having a win under your belt?
It's good. Those mornings are always better than the contrary. So, it's been really good to start the year off now with a couple wins and just 6 or 7 races. And, we're obviously gearing up for the Coke 600 this weekend in Charlotte, like you talked about. Having a special paint scheme there with FedEx for the small businesses is a big deal for us.
I'm going to talk about that in just 1 minute. I think that's a great deal. What about the car last night? Like, how did you feel about the car and the team's strategy in the early part of the race?
You know, I thought we were pretty good right from the get-go. I mean, we, took with the invert, so we had to start 16th because we finished 5th in the on the race on Sunday, and they inverted the top 20. So we started, you know, mid-pack, and it took us a little while to get towards the front, but we were pretty good all day and really kind of got at our best right at the end of the race when it really counted.
We're talking to Denny Hamlin. So he made that last pit stop, and then there was a caution by Clint Bowyer, which shook things up a little bit with 34 laps to go. You stayed out on the track, and your crew chief told you over the radio, quote, "You ain't going to like it, but we're going to have to eat our vegetables here," end quote. What was going through your head at that point?
He knows I don't like vegetables, so he knows I'm not going to like the call. But we had to stay out there. We had just pitted for tires 8 laps earlier, which is our last set of new tires. And so we had to stay out there. And that kind of made our bed where we at least got to control the restart. We were able to hold those guys off for a lap. They ended up getting in a crash, and then the rain came. So it was it obviously worked out in our favor. We were a race-winning car anyway, but you know, it's interesting to win one. That was definitely the first one in my career that I've won that's been rain short.
Denny, speaking of that crash, like, you didn't pit on the restart with 29 laps to go, and then there was that collision between Kyle Busch and Chase Elliott behind you. How aware were you of the crash?
I saw it in my rearview mirror because I saw that you know, I had Busch beside me in the middle of the corner. I saw Chase coming up behind me on the corner exit, and then I saw Chase kind of spinning around. So I didn't know what caused the contact, but I saw the end of it. That was about it.
Denny Hamlin is joining us. All right, so that's your third Cup win at Darlington. You made the point that it's a driver's racetrack. Can you lay that out for me? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I just think that there are certain circuits that we race that the driver can make a bigger impact or difference on his day and the success of his day. You know, it's different than other sports that play on the same size court or basketball field or a football field each and every week. All the lines are the same, right? They're drawn the same. Well, for us, you know, we have different types of racetracks, short tracks, intermediate, super speedways. So it takes a different type of racing skill set for each one. But that track in particular has a mix of a few. And as a driver, you can move around and make your car faster if you've got a higher skill level.
Denny Hamlin joining us. And then, Denny, after the race, you broke out a face mask. There was a mask of your own face. I thought it was an incredible look. Where did the idea come from? And then how pleased were you with the way it looked?
Well, you know, it happened really quick, and we had to kind of rush it because it came together within like a day or so. So getting it printed off, making sure everything was the right size, whether it be my mouth or my nose, was a bit of a challenge, but I think we still could make it better if we had to do it all over again, but I'm not sure that I will. It was such a good hit. You know, you don't want to ruin a good thing, but certainly I'm glad it was a happy face because, you know, it would have sucked to have had a bad week or a crash or something. Then you have to go put on your happy mask.
That would have sucked for sure. I hope people are watching on CBS Sports Network. We just rolled it in. I think it looks awesome. It's great. Now, you finished in the top five on Sunday in your first race back. What was the experience like of getting back into a car and racing after so much time off?
You know, it wasn't as big of a challenge as I thought it would be, especially with no practice or anything, just kind of firing off. But, I mean, all of these drivers are so good, and the teams are so good. They can adapt to kind of any situation that's kind of thrown at them. So we had good success both races, and I think that moving forward, these teams are going to continue, and drivers are going to continue to just get better and better to be able to adapt with no practice.
I guess I could say that maybe you stayed sharp or kind of sharp by staying active in iRacing during the time away from the track. You had a now famous moment where you were driving and your daughter Taylor came up to talk to you. You were about to go in for a pit stop, so the timing was nearly perfect, but then the screen went black. For those who don't know what happened, what is the backstory behind that?
Well, it started early that morning when I was making the kids breakfast. She found a remote in the kitchen, just a universal remote, that I don't know if it has batteries or not. If the batteries are in, it's probably dead. But she just kept playing this game where if she pointed the remote at you and she hit pause, you had to stop moving. If she hit mute, you had to stop talking. If she hit power, then you had to disappear. So she's carrying around this remote all day, and she wants to go downstairs and ride go-karts. And I'm like, you know, hang on, give me a second. And she becomes very frustrated. She's got the remote in her hand, hits the power button maybe on accident or to make me disappear, and instead she shut off my monitors on my computer.
Awesome.
So I'm racing blind, and I ended up crashing.
That is awesome. I don't know why the kids are turning the universal remote on us as parents. I would like to get the universal remote and turn it back on them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty funny. So what else did you do with your time away from the track besides iRacing?
Well, really just worked on physical fitness. I mean, trying to spend this time getting projects done that takes time and you don't have time to do while I'm in the middle of my normal racing season. So just, you know, tried to give myself a little project each day to accomplish. And really, I enjoyed these 2 months of kind of being able to work on myself personally. And I think that, you know, we're starting to see benefits now on track for all the work that I've put in.
Denny Hamlin joins us. Now, you and I have talked in the past about your connection to Michael Jordan. How much were you able to watch The Last Dance, and what did you make of what you saw?
It was absolutely incredible. And yesterday, you know, fortunate for me, I got to watch the very last episode an hour before I headed down to Darlington yesterday to race. So the motivation is there to be great, right? To push yourself to that next level, the level that Jordan had in him, you know, naturally, it seemed like. So I think that I never thought of myself as the most talented out there, but I feel like I outwork and outthink some guys. And so I've never been really great at sports. I've just worked really hard at them. When I first started golf, I stunk. So I went to work and I became a 3 handicap, you know. So I put in the work because I'm competitive and I understand that fire that he's got.
That's a serious stick. That's no joke, a 3. So as I mentioned off the very top, you and FedEx are unveiling a special paint scheme ahead of this weekend's race in Charlotte. You're paying tribute to small business owners. How did that come to be, and why is that so important to you?
Well, me and my father used to own a small business in Virginia, and we understand, you know, small business is kind of the heartbeat of our country and our economy. So FedEx actually started this small business grant. They're going to donate $1 million to grant for the small businesses to support them. And you can go to FedEx/support-small-grants to learn more. But, you know, we're going to have a special paint scheme. That's something we usually do not have in our FedEx Camry. It looks the same almost every week. But you've seen that throughout this whole coronavirus and pandemic, they've continued to deliver.
I'm going to look forward to that and see what that looks like. Again, they're going to break out a special paint scheme ahead of Charlotte to pay tribute to small business owners. He is the driver of the number 11 FedEx Express Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing, 3-time winner of the Daytona 500, and coming off a win last night in the rain, Denny Hamlin, my guest. Denny, it's great to have you back. Good luck this weekend, and always good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
You too. Great talking to you, Denny, as always. All right, there is our number one, almost. I've got some time right now. If you want to hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. It is toll free. All right, we also had a reset of Brandon Boyd, who is the frontman for the band Incubus. And he and I went to the same high school, not at the same time, but we both represented the Deep 818. Calabasas High School, if you need us. Let's go to the phones quickly. Arizona. Arthur in Arizona. Arthur, what's going on? How are you?
Out to the pimp in the box. Jim Rome, thanks for taking my call, man.
You got it, man. What's up?
You know, I've been listening to you, and you brought tears to my eyes thinking about the 818. I graduated Canoga Park High. My girlfriend went to Calabasas High. Chatsworth High rules. Now, remember, you came to my house in Agoura for a party. I believe it was 1978. Maybe 79. You didn't know me. I didn't know you then. But Who Knows was playing. That was a band playing at my house. Those were my boys. Al Savino, shout out. Bill Kaler, shout out. Steve Hall, shout out. You know what? They could be right up there with Incubus. Maybe one of these days we could roll them together and get the 818 back together.
Arthur, brother, did you say that I came to your house for a party in 1978?
I believe it was 78, 79.
How did you know who I was? How did I know who you were? What the hell was I doing at your house?
You were rolling with friends. You remember the valley? You rolled the different houses. I moved to Agoura when there was nothing out there. Oh, well, I should say my parents moved out there when there was nothing out there. You know, I was 18 years old, maybe 19. I had who knows playing at my house.
Let me jump in, Arthur. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Come on, man. Stop lying. He's saying that I went to his house and who knows was playing. Yeah, I don't remember that. I don't remember that house party in Agoura where who knows was playing. I mean, maybe, Arthur. I said, how did I know you and how did you know me? And what the hell was I doing there? You know, Rome, you were rolling with your crew. I didn't really have a crew. 78. Where did that put me in 78? 78 put me in 8th grade. Yeah, no, I was not going to house parties in 8th grade in Agoura with my crew. I didn't have a crew. My crew was Spots. He and I were not going to house parties, checking out who knows. Dude, how many of you are making up crap about me like that? Stop doing it. You tell yourself something enough times, you'll believe it. He believes.